Greetings, Internet, and welcome to a brand new year of Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative professionals and entrepreneurs looking to grow by learning new things, getting inspired, and breaking down the barriers that prevent them from doing the work they were born to do. I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to episode 127, Interview with Martin G. Martin is a senior art director at Time and freelance illustrator during the evenings and weekends. In this episode of Getting Work to Work, we talk about his love for truth and journalism, all things Star Wars, how improv has impacted his life and work, and the importance of being real. Show notes and links for this episode can be found at gwtw.co/127. Getting Work to Work is brought to you by Chris Martin Studios, a media production company telling stories with heart, edge, and fearlessness through video, podcasts, and design for those who dare to build a better world. Keep in touch with Chris Martin Studios by signing up for the Curiosity Lab, my weekly email newsletter at gwtw.co/127. By doing so, you'll receive inspiration on Mondays and Fridays, including ways to increase your creativity, curiosity, and wonder. All right, you ready for this interview with Martin? Let's get into it. Martin, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. You're actually the first episode of 2018.
Oh my gosh, really? Wow. Yeah. That's exciting.
I know it is.
Happy New Year. Hey.
Exactly. Happy New Year a couple days before.
Okay. Clink.
Why don't you start by introducing yourself and share a little bit about what you do?
My name is Martin G. from California originally, and I am currently a senior art director at Time Magazine. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I was talking to someone else about this yesterday, saying like, this is being here at this magazine, having this title, even being in the city of New York, it's kind of this, it's already exceeded my expectations in life. So I go, oh, I don't know where else to go now, you know? So yeah. I'm kind of, when it comes to that, I'm pretty content. You know, it's like, wow.
Well, and reading your bio, you've lived in a lot of different places. So kind of each place has it been one step closer to New York in a sense?
I guess so. I mean, the funny thing is we talked about having mentors. I met this legendary magazine art director, Robert Newman, in 2000. Mm-hmm. And I remember I found an old email to him saying, how do I get to New York? You know, do I have to just move and... But knowing my upbringing and my parents instilling in my head, like, you need to have stability, you know, that was like a major thing for me, where I knew friends who just dropped everything and just moved to New York with a suitcase or a duffel bag. Like, no, that's not me and my personality. So when you mentioned that I moved from city to city, I kind of came up through newspapers. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do editorial design. Unlike design firms, you have like 100 or thousands of them in a city, and you'll have like one paper in a city. And I worked at the San Jose Mercury News. That was my hometown. Went to Chicago, went to Boston. And then being in Boston, I was thinking, wow, I'm so close to New York. Let's just shoot for that somehow. And that somehow worked, you know?
That's awesome. I like how you have this trajectory in mind of where you're headed. But it also seems like as you're describing the difference between hundreds and thousands of ad agencies versus like one paper, mm-hmm. there's that thought that creatives are often told of be the best that you can be. And it's hard to be the best that you can be in a land of 1,000. It's a little bit closer to get to that goal when you're in the land of one, in a newspaper.
Yeah, you know, I never thought about that in terms of advertising or branding or just design firm versus editorial design. I mean, I think in a way, every industry is small. It's a small world. You know, I was on a podcast last night too, so I was saying like, you know, the best advice is like, don't be a dick. you never know who you're going to work with. You never know who's going to be your boss. You never know who's going to be your colleague. But I guess you're right. I mean, I think there's so many more general designers, mm-hmm. and I think doing editorial design is kind of a more focused niche. Mm. I mean, I didn't even learn editorial design in school. I mean, our design program wasn't really geared toward that. Mm-hmm. I only got into it because I was involved with the school newspaper. Mm. I kind of fell in love with that too. So like the whole idea about, you know, journalism and truth and stories, you know. So it's funny how I've evolved through so many influences, you know, like pop culture, you know, cartoons, you know, toys, Star Wars, you know, all that stuff kind of happened. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. What was it about truth, facts, politics, journalism, and ethics that has captured your fascination?
It's so important to me. I think it's the idea of equality, diversity, you know. I mean, we're recording audio, but if you can't tell, I'm Asian American on this site, Chinese specifically. I was born here. My dad was born here. So the whole idea of truth now, it's become debatable now, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
This whole political climate has really taken me for a loop. Like I've been like depressed. I've been trying to find not purpose, but something where like my work, I feel has to be important. Mm-hmm. I've been given this fortunate opportunity to be at this magazine where, I mean, when I was in Portland, Oregon, I was at a small magazine. I think our circulation was 7,000 to 10,000. And I think ours now is like 3 million.
Oh, wow.
So it's kind of like shit, I drew something and a lot of people might see this, you know?
Yeah.
So it's weird.
Does it ever enter your mind, you know, they say, you know, think of the audience that you're creating for. Does that get in the way sometimes though, when there's that many eyeballs out there receiving your work?
I don't know. I think when you look at Time Magazine, we've been called like an institution or a legacy publication, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, we have to keep that in mind. Even though we print 3 million copies, we still have a certain demographic, mm-hmm. kind of older, I don't know, compared to Wired or compared to Esquire or even like Real Simple versus Family Circle. It's like there's so many publications out there. You have to, kind of consider that. Mm-hmm. Even the way we look, too. Like sometimes we can't get too crazy, you know, stuff like that. But we try to do what we can within those parameters.
Yeah. So you mentioned your love for pop culture, and one of the things that I read on your site was that you learned how to draw reading comics and watching Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh, yeah, totally.
If you could go back to that moment when you were a kid, as an adult, and have a conversation with yourself, what do you think you would say?
I'd probably say it's doable. Don't get discouraged, you know. That was a challenging thing too when I was growing up. It was always told to me as like, this is only a hobby. This is not a career you can make money off of or live off of. And then that's just back again going to like the Asian American upbringing, you know. You want that stability. Mm-hmm. You know, art is not stable, really. I mean,
for sure.
You mean, it's funny, like even if I was to tell someone, like, you know, graphic design is way more stable than being an actor or doing stand-up or, I don't know, it's something that, like, I think all parents or all kids go through in life where it's, you're not going to be a baseball player, just go be an accountant, you know, that is like the stability part. So again, I'm super fortunate to be able to do creative work and have like a 401k. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess I would say to myself, you know, like, be patient. It will happen if you like work hard, you know, and not just that too. Like, and that's like a mantra of, you know, Asian American families, like work hard, you know, but it's not just that. You have to be good at it. You have to network. You have to know your field, not just know your stuff, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting you mentioned know your field, because often the advice that I hear is know your craft. But it seems like the trajectory that you've been on is finding the stability in the instableness that people are almost attracted to in the field.
Oh yeah. I've been here. Print's been dead forever. So how am I still doing this? Yeah. Oh, the craft is definitely important. Like I was telling someone else the other day, where what I look for in illustrators, like, you have to know how to draw. I mean, that I come from a more representational. I don't know. I like all kinds of illustration, but I need to see good drawing skills. Even though if you're like a bad drawing illustrator, it has to be good too. There's that thing I look for. So what we're talking about now, craft versus
knowing stability. The field. Yeah, knowing the field.
Yeah, I guess you just have to know what's going on. Like, who's who and what's what. You know, like I'm also a freelance illustrator, and I'll go to the bookstore and just rummage through magazine mastheads and go, okay, who's? It's funny. I know people on my mailing list before I even like meet them in person. I go, you're at this magazine, and before that, you were at this magazine. And so it's kind of like knowing your sports teams, like knowing your players, and knowing your. I had a teacher in college, John Clapp. He would say, "This is back when we were in school. You guys know more guitarists than you know illustrators, and that's a bad sign, you know." And right now, I don't know anything about pop culture or pop music or hip hop. Now it's like I know more about who works at Vanity Fair and who works at Wired and who works at Esquire. Just like kind of, you know, it's your industry. You gotta know it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess even when I was living in Portland, yeah, you know, Wieden and Kennedy or Nike and Adidas, or those are like the majors. And I don't know. Even I was doing editorial design there at a magazine, and I still kind of knew that was around me, you know, or be a part of AIGA and all that stuff, you know.
Yeah. One of the things in pop culture that it appears that you are massively obsessed with is Star Wars.
Oh, definitely.
And as I'm thinking about, like, okay, I don't want to ask about prequels versus originals or like the new stuff, because, you know, that's kind of the easy question. Mm-hmm. So my question is, if you could live in any moment or place in the Star Wars universe, when or where would it be?
Oh my gosh. You know what? When you think about it, it's all kind of horrible, actually. they're constantly at war. I mean, you wouldn't have Star Wars without the war and the stars. Mm-hmm. where would I be? I guess more like what would I want to be? I think the whole Jedi thing is kind of the most Asian Buddhist part of Star Wars. Mm. You know, when you talk about like the prequels and original, like the original was more mystical, you know, and the prequels are more like political and like bureaucracy and blah, blah, blah. You couldn't, like, there's like a Sith Lord sitting in the same room with you and you couldn't even tell.
Yeah.
Right. And here now it's like even the newer ones, it's saying, you know, the whole idea of the Force is like, it's for everybody. It's not, not just one group of people own it, or, so there's a kind of like universalness to it. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always felt like Yoda was like a little Buddha type figure. And I think I like sci-fi. But I'm more into this because it's more, you know, like a Western, cowboys, and there's samurais, there's swords, you know, as opposed to the very clinical, technical Star Trek stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what stories are you drawn to? I mean, it sounds like, you know, Star Wars has captured your attention in some mm-hmm. mystical and you know, maybe political and philosophical ways, but are there certain stories that you can't stop thinking about?
To be even more geeky, like Tron, like stuff like that is kind of, I've always admired like the 80s version.
Yeah.
Like, well, you know what, that funny story. That was the first movie I ever went to on the first day as a kid.
Really?
I remember being in line going, oh yeah, I got this t-shirt in the mail and first day that became a trend. Yes.
That's cool.
But even like the newer one, like the Tron Legacy, like the aesthetics, like black with like the glowing blues and oranges. And it's just pretty. Story-wise, I don't know. When it comes to story, I can't think of anything because I like telling other people's stories. When people ask me, like, do I have any stories? I go, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, if I was to ever do a graphic novel or a web series or something, I think I do have stories, but I just don't know how to tap into them, or I don't know that they're good enough to be told. I don't know.
So when you're telling other people's stories, what are you drawn to? Are you drawn to people that are overcoming obstacles, or, you know?
Yeah, that's a universal thing. You know, that's the whole, going back to Star Wars or mythology, there's the whole hero's journey. You know, there's always people going through a lot of shit just to get by, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that this all goes back to, like, the journalism stuff, you know, people wanting to live their lives and do their thing. And yeah, the whole thing about truths and equality and all that, you know? So I don't know, it's funny how all this stuff relates, you know? It's this past year has been kind of crazy. We're talking about certain demographics voting a certain way and try not to label anything, but to say, okay, well, here's your underlying reasons. Trying to figure out people's intentions or their fears or their, I don't know. It's complicated. Mm-hmm. You know, we it's funny to go to talk about the whole Star Wars stuff, you know, like da-da-da. And then you have this reality of people not getting along, killing each other. It's just, I don't know. Yeah. It's a tough time for me. I guess tough time in general, I guess.
Well, it makes a lot of sense too, because, you know, your job as an illustrator, and I imagine, is to take very complicated information and distill it into visual information. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how do you do that when you're wrestling with all this stuff?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, that's the thing. I choose to do this. When it comes to illustration, I'm not illustrating these difficult topics or heart-wrenching, gut-wrenching issues. I'm more of like a funny haha illustrator.
Okay.
I was talking to a friend of mine. I'm not like doing covers or full pages. I'm more of like a little spot illustration or a quarter page. But the design part is where I'm kind of, that's where I want to do that kind of work, where like on the weekends, I'll find out there's some crazy shit happens, or some like fucked up shit happens, where I would email my design director and my creative director and say, I want this story. Mm. I know this is going to be in the cover. I know this is going to be in the feature. Well, and I want it because it's important to me. I feel like it's, for example, like the white supremacist Nazis in, is it Charlottesville? And then there's like the Orlando shooting at Pulse. Whenever there's like a big, something drops politically, like, oh my God, I want it. Because I just feel it's so important. If you're personally invested in something, you'll do better work than someone who's not. So like, for example, like if I had to design a story about, I don't know, Justin Bieber, I don't care, you know?
Yeah.
So don't give that assignment to me. So I think that's what's cool about my design director. She knows who to give what to who and, you know, mix it up.
Yeah.
But at the same time, our design staff is just like, if we're busy with one thing, you could pick up another thing immediately. And it's all pretty seamless, you know?
What is the difference between being an art director and being an illustrator? Are they two different worlds? Do they have some similarities? How do you move between those two worlds?
Literally between illustrator and in design. I'm like command tab, boom, 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 going back and forth, you know? But
that's awesome.
That's like the best, one of the best quick keys I know. Because I do both. I design when I illustrate when I design, you know? Mm-hmm. It's the same thing to me, you know? But,
Let me come at it a different way for you. Does flow, or, you know, being in the zone, look any different as an art director, where maybe you're working with more people versus an illustrator where you might be doing something more by yourself?
Yeah, it's hard to be in that zone. We're working in an open space office. Hmm. I'm an introvert dying in that environment, So I like the collaboration. The thing is, I work with like brilliant people. They're super passionate too. So like you have like photographers, and the photo department wants like to run the best photo. Editors and writers want to have like more story. So as the designer, art director, you're putting it together to make it a kind of a digestible package. So we're kind of like putting it all together, you know. Mm-hmm. As an illustrator, yeah, I like just to sit at home and just work on my stuff, you know. But even that, you're still emailing with someone back and forth about ideas, sketches, you know. Yeah, that's the thing. I just like doing both so much, you know. I remember being in school, like you're either a designer or you're either an illustrator. I think now it is, you got to be everything. Mm-hmm. And I feel like my skills are very basic. Design illustration, that's it. That's pretty much it. I mean, I do a little animation, little video. But everybody now, you need to know how to code. You need to know how to ride a unicycle. I don't know. There's just so much. You look at job listings and they want you to do everything. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, man. I tried to learn Flash like a long time ago and I couldn't figure it out. Like, I do minimal coding.
I still miss that era of just the very visually rich websites that were huge and clunky yet magical in some ways.
Yeah. The old, what, GeoCities or something? Or
no, there was this one website. It was called, like, tooadvanced.com, and it would just be this giant Flash site with just this crazy futuristic UI.
Oh. And you know what? Like, I may have seen this. I remember. This sounds very familiar.
Yeah, and like they would have the cool kind of Tron Legacy soundtrack, like dun 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 dun, and it's just like, yeah, this is the internet, man. It's just like, oh look, four blocks and images in the blocks. Uh-huh. I don't know. I have strong opinions about where the web is at right now, and I find it all a little bit repetitive and boring.
Oh really? Like what's exciting to you then? What do you?
I love when someone puts all in on a giant image or a giant illustration, mm-hmm. With minimal text and just goes for it. It's just like, I have chosen this. It's not a stock photo. It's something that's been created for this spot right here, and you mm-hmm. see that intentionality. And that almost the guts to say, I don't need anything more right here. Mm-hmm. And I think this is cool.
But hasn't that changed just based on bandwidth or internet speed? Before, that would be like impossible to do. Now it's okay. Boom, we could do it.
Yeah. Or, you know, our patience level is down. So if we saw the loading indicator like in the past, maybe be like, I'm not going to stay for that now.
Yeah.
Whereas back then we're like, yes.
Yeah. I remember like 26K baud AOL something, something. I was like, that was horrible. When you mentioned that, like a big image with like minimal type, I think of different magazines. I think of like the New York Times magazine. They do this thing annually where it's like they kind of recap of all the people who died the past year. The cover is like this beautiful minimal image of a hat on a table, and the type is not in, it's not even in like in the negative space. Mm. The type is on top of their own logo. Mm. So that makes me think of that site you're talking about where it's just like a big image and little type, as opposed to like stuff we do or like a literary journal where it's like a bazillion words, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean that website and like the New York Times magazine, that's like pushing the limits on like the sophisticated side of things. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I come at it from more of a technical, like I've developed a lot of websites. So coming at it from that technical standpoint of like, all right, we got to work, make sure it works on mobile and make sure it works on this. And after a while, you're just like, where's that magic? Where's that feeling when I'm in this program versus the code editor? And I don't know. I think about that kind of stuff of just like wanting to make sure that I'm in touch with the magic and not jumping to the midichlorians.
Oh my God. I read the best Twitter thread recently about midichlorians that this whole new movie basically just puts it, just shuts it down basically.
Yeah.
Going back to the prequels, how it's, you know, the Jedi was very like bureaucratic and we didn't care who you were. Your numbers were up, you know, like, hey, your sale numbers are up. So-and-so, here's a promotion.
Yeah.
Boom, you're a Jedi. But then as opposed to the whole mystical side of things where it's this thing around you as opposed to something that's measurable, you know? So, see, everything comes back to Star Wars.
It really does. Especially when, you know, you start really, I don't know, diving into the hero's journey and diving into stories and villains. And I think we really use story to try to make sense of what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, either it's fictional or real life stories about people in your community or politics or refugees, immigrants, you know, all that. It's all, there's truths to it, you know, like the mythologies and the, there's lessons to be learned or, I don't know, I could just rattle off things and say, this is everything.
And that's part of the fun, right? Of you can say whatever you want to say right now.
Oh, because I'm on Twitter or because I'm on your podcast?
You're on my podcast.
All right.
And I'm like, yeah, whatever you say is going to be interesting.
I would disagree. I'm kind of boring, so it's okay.
I don't think you are. So one of the things that I thought was interesting, and I hear this a lot from successful creatives, is that learning new skills and constantly growing your abilities is really important. So what's something that you've recently tried learning that went well?
That's the thing. You know, the whole thing about old dogs can't learn new tricks, or I'm that old dog now. Going back to like the whole illustration design thing, I can't code. So instead, I'm going to draw pictures. I'm going to move around boxes on my screen, you know? Oh, new skill. Oh, this is something totally different, but at the same time related. I've been taking improv classes this year.
Ooh.
Yeah, that has been kind of a thing. It's been kind of like my only joy this year, really. So let me back up. I was an illustration major in school. Eventually, we had animation classes that were taught by Warner Brothers, feature animation. So cool. During summer or spring break, we would go down to LA or Burbank or visit their studios. So we're in this tour, and we run across an improv class for the animators. It kind of like gets them to loosen up, just like bang out ideas. You're literally doing that. You're just literally going, here's a situation. Go, you know, here's an idea, you just do it. Mm-hmm. And ever since I saw that class, I go, I want to do that. So fast forward 10, 20, 30 years later, I was in Portland and I saw an improv class and I go, oh yeah, I'm going to take it. So I went for the first one. It was great. It was fun. And then I went to go next week, but I couldn't get into the building. Mm. So that turned me off. So that kind of shut that down.
Yeah.
So then fast forward again to New York, you know, it's been a rough year. A lot of stuff has been going on in my personal life, you know, current events too. Mm-hmm. I go, fuck it. I'm just going to take a class. I'm currently in level 4 at the Pit, where improv is amazing. It teaches you to be confident. People can go in with like stage fright or have anxiety, be introverted. And you just go and play. The idea of saying yes and is the mantra or the motto. You're saying yes to your partner suggesting XYZ. And then if XYZ is a thing, what comes next after that? You know, it's kind of it's so fun too. I recommend it for everybody, really. It's kind of how you interact with art directors, or how you interact with editors. You kind of you riff off of each other, and it's kind of this fun game. That's the thing too, that there's the game of finding what's interesting in a scene and then just like exploiting it, really. Yeah. It's kind of, it's funny. People think, oh, improv, you just make stuff up. Yeah, you do, but there's also a set of rules and parameters that kind of make it successful, as opposed to just being like crazy off the wall, you know? You go to like a jam. That's a jam is when anyone shows up and play, right? Mm-hmm. To play. So you can have like a scene in a roller coaster or a office, and then someone just gets up and shoots themselves. That is, okay, that's improv. Yeah, you're making something up, but you just really threw a grenade into the scene. You're like, blow. Or you could be on a roller coaster and you suddenly fall out of it. And then that just, where does that take you? It's just so extreme. So in my last class, we were taught to, you know, you have to heighten things. You know, you have to have a relationship between the two people. That makes it more interesting than anything else, really. My teacher has this awesome, what's this, not a metaphor, but this example where you start out a scene, you're just like two people, and you could have, you can establish a relationship, you know, by saying, I love this about you, or we've done this every year for the past 10 years. That immediately gives you a connection between those two. Mm-hmm. And to always focus on the positive, and you're not, his example is lobsters in space. You don't go from like childhood friends, all of a sudden you're out to lobsters in space. That could be a scene later that relates to the childhood friends who are now lobsters. Am I making sense? I'm just rattling off.
No, it's cool because like, as you're describing this, you know, I'm on one hand, I'm thinking about how have you brought this into your work as a art director and illustrator? And then on the other hand, as you're talking about lobsters in space, I'm picturing a lobster with, you know, a space hat on floating through space.
Yeah, that'd be an awesome, that'd be a fun illustration to do.
Oh, completely.
That's the thing. It all goes back to like doing thumbnails, brainstorming ideas for an illustration. You know, you just sit there and you draw little squares, you fill them in with ideas. If this is happening, what's happening here? What's happening here? You know, the whole draw whatever comes to your mind type of thing, or it's free, the free association, the whole idea generation. It's all related. It's all being creative. It really is.
Well, even just describing the way you're describing improv, you know, I see connections in pretty much everything. It's like, even like interviewing in a podcast, there's an element of improv to it that makes it fun.
You know, we're just having a conversation, really. Mm-hmm. And in one of my previous classes, we did a thing where I think the exercise was called just park bench. Two people sitting side by side, and someone throws out a topic, and you just talk. And just watching two people talk was so entertaining, and they weren't even trying to be funny. You know, I did an exercise with a partner, and it was just real. That's the funny thing too, we were just being real and honest. I think that's what I like about it. It's what I like about journalism, editorial stuff. So the exercise, I was with my friend, we were talking, and what was the topic? I think it was like blue collar, white collar, right? She starts the scene going, oh, you know what? I'm dating this guy. He's a blue collar worker. He works da-da-da, and he's not sophisticated. He doesn't have enough money. And I just talked about how, you know, if you love this guy or you like this guy, it's okay, you know? Mm-hmm. And we talked about it for like 10 minutes. And it wasn't funny. It was just real and honest. Where I would go, yeah, you know, I pretend I had a boyfriend and go, oh yeah, my boyfriend, he's a trapeze artist. He has great hands and he's strong. He holds me, da 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 da. And you're like, it's okay, you know, you can have your Wall Street job, and your boyfriend could be, you know, you like him. It's okay, you know. And that was improvised. That was like an improvised conversation that had an underlying truth, or oh, this is another concept too in improv. like the height of your intelligence. You're given a situation, and basically, what would you actually do in this situation? So my friend's talking about her boyfriend, and I'm going to give her my advice based on my life experiences or based on what I know as a person. So it's really weird. It blows my mind how it's like it's improvised. It's all made up, but that stuff makes it real, you know. And we do this thing called object work too, where you're pretending to hold things, you're pretending to interact in an environment. Like I could be in a kitchen opening cabinet doors, pulling out a glass, opening the refrigerator, pulling out a bottle of beer, pouring it. It's just this, you're basically miming things.
Yeah.
And it's, there's some people who do it so well. It's so realistic. It's so engaging. You look at them and you're like, wow. Yeah. And they're just like this whole thing, like it's so fun. I don't know. I can't not stop talking about it. Or it's just, I recommend people take a class, go see a show. That will make it all come together. If you see a show, you see a good team, put on a good set for 20 minutes, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant stuff, yeah.
It sounds like something that everyone should do in order to, I think, get in touch with, I think, their humanity again.
Yeah, totally. You're literally standing out on stage in front of a whole bunch of people you don't even know. And it's okay. It's cool. You're out there. Put yourself out there. I don't know. I think a lot of my friends say, oh, I can never do that. It's okay. You don't have to. You can just watch it. Or if it fits your personality. I don't know. When I think about stuff, like on social media, I don't really hold back on stuff. I just kind of say what's going on in my life. You know, like, I haven't seen a therapist in a few months, so it's kind of like, oh yeah, this is my therapy. I could go out and just like go to a jam, go to an improv show, and just watch stuff and laugh. And
yeah,
and I'm on Twitter, more Facebook, really. Like I just, you know, be reflective and be really TMI about my life. You know, like today kind of sucked because of X, Y, Z, and I don't know.
Do you ever find that there's a fear in being that, I guess, open in those situations on social media?
No, I don't think so. I'm not afraid of what people think, or I don't know. This is the opposite of this. It's like people say, oh, you're so brave. I'm like, no, I'm not being brave. I'm just being real and honest with you. There's no bravery involved. Bravery is like running into a burning building.
Yeah.
You know? I'm just sharing my feelings. that should not be anything.
That shouldn't be an example of bravery.
No. Yeah, that should be like normal. That should be your baseline.
Yeah.
Right?
Interesting.
I guess. I don't know.
I think it's fascinating because this is like, I'm hearing so much humanity in what you're talking about. Just you said it was a hard year, but I'm hearing you reconnecting with yourself and connecting with others and really finding new ways to connect to your work. And all that's really, I think, just really inspirational and cool.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. Like, it's funny to have someone see it from the outside. Coming in from my side, it's all like chaotic and depressing, and it's all darkness. I don't know. I think the whole thing about, you know, being truthful and honest is, I don't know. I have to be honest with what I see happening in the world. You know, I have to go, well, this is fucked up. I'm not supposed to have an opinion about things too. When you're a journalist, you're kind of this, you know, not gatekeeper. What's the word? I draw pictures. I'm not good with words.
Objective.
Yeah, objective, you know. And fair. And but this year has been so fucked up, man. We're like debating Nazism, you know, or equality is not, or I don't know, man. The whole like identity politics and, you know, the white working class. But then, you know, hey, you know, I think it's all based on racism. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, you got to like strip away all the, there's all these stories in the past year saying like, who are these voters? Why did they do this? Why did they do that? But then when you strip it all away, that's what it comes down to, like this fear and self-preservation based on your group, right? Mm-hmm. But then I'm all for self-preservation, but then I want to think of everybody.
Yeah.
If you truly believe all lives matter, you have to say all lives. You can't just say that to belittle another group. You know, I could just like punch a wall right now. It's just so, it makes me shake, you know, it makes me like,
It's the expression of anger is definitely part of that human response, though, of being able to see injustice, to see wrong and be like, hey, I'm not okay with this.
Yeah, but this is another bullshit of this whole year. It's debatable now.
Yeah.
It's a debate. You know, like the sky is blue, sky is green. Okay. No, it's one or the other. It's not both. Mm-hmm. You know, or like fake news and
Well, moving right along to a happier topic for you.
Sure.
Is there anything better than the soundtrack to Tron Legacy?
Nah, that's like the best thing ever.
Where do you go to in your mind when you turn on that soundtrack?
The future. It's awesome. It makes you think of like the movie, you know. I think it's just, you know, I should make you a playlist.
That would be awesome, because I wonder what's on your daily playlist.
Yeah, I'll send you a Spotify thing. The other thing is I listen to drum and bass mostly. It's like it's a subgenre of like, you know, electronic music, dance music, whatever you want to call it. And I've been kind of stuck in the early 2000s with this music. It's hard for me to find new stuff to listen to. And what's cool about Spotify, it recommends things. I go, oh yeah, let's try this. And I go, oh wow, this is cool. You know, it's just this rabbit hole. You know.
Yeah.
Like I said, like I don't know anything about pop music. Like who's what's happening in hip hop? I don't understand it anymore, you know? Or I don't understand like pop music, you know, like I'm stuck in the 80s still.
Yeah. I've got my group of artists that I just kind of hang on to, and I don't really pay much attention to who's popular on the radio or anything like that.
Yeah. Like, I don't think I've intentionally listened to Taylor Swift or, but for some reason, Lady Gaga is like my favorite. It's bizarre. I've always liked her visually. Mm-hmm. I think that attracted me to her first. It's like the avant-garde Alexander McQueen, you know, meat dresses. And the Bad Romance video is like my favorite thing ever. It's just this aesthetic. See, this is the thing. I come from the visual side of things where it's like Tron, you know. Clean black, blue lights, you know, Bad Romance, white, black wardrobes and gold armor, you know, stuff like that. That excites me, you know. And then the Lady Gaga video, the Netflix documentary, was fascinating. You want to talk about a creative person and a perfectionist? Like, look at her. There's one scene where she's talking about, having a jacket to put on, and she was complaining about how I need to know the fabric, so I need to adjust my speed, my movements based on how smooth the sleeve is to get in and out of it.
Oh wow!
This is her preparing for the Super Bowl halftime. She's such a performer and such a like creative force, and I'm like going, oh my god, I'm in love with you. And then there's this humanity in her too, where in the earlier scenes, she's at her like niece's baptism, and she's just being anti-Lady Gaga, you know, anti-Stephanie, you know? And then there's another scene where she's just like crying in the dark alone, saying how there's all these people talking to her, like looking at her, touching her, talking to her. But at the end of the day, she goes home alone in bed, you know? Mm-hmm. And then like, I'm sitting here crying too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of like those parallels you see with other people, you know, like the whole like storytelling, you know, you relate to these things and you cry too. And see, I'm like getting teary eyed right now. Just thinking about like, we do all this stuff in our lives. Like we do, I live in New York. I have this cool job. But then at the same time, I come home, I'm sad, you know, and I don't know. I read the news and then it's all shitty.
Well, it's just a good reminder that like our heroes, the people that are worshipped, they're people too, and they have the same problems, just a different scale.
I think that's what was so good about her documentary was that all I saw was this icon. All I saw was this pop star, really, you know? Yeah, and I always joke, you know, like even your favorite design celebrity poops too, you know? So
some of them will actually do it on their webcam.
Oh, great. not, I'm not tuning into that.
Yeah. I watched Stefan Sagmeister's Happy Film.
You know what? Why did I think of him once you said that?
I know. And I'm just like, man, you know, what wouldn't this guy do on camera?
No, like he'll carve out an AIGA poster on his body. And
yeah.
See, that's, I don't know, man. That's bullshit. I mean, I love the guy. I love his work, but I guess that's in every community or every industry. You're going to have your rock stars. You're going to have your workhorses. You're going to have your, I don't know. I don't want to be that at all, ever.
Yeah. Well, Martin, final question for you.
Sure.
This has been an awesome conversation. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope your audience thinks it's okay.
Oh, I think it's a great interview because it's real. It's a conversation. And
yeah, for sure.
You mentioned something earlier that I think would just be a great question to end on. You know, you've been working your way through all of these different cities. And now that you find yourself in New York, how do you keep dreaming bigger and pushing yourself into new territory and what's next?
This is it. I'm done. No, that's the thing. In my personal life, there's been kind of, you know, shit going on this year. And a criticism of me or of my, or like, no, how's that work? Okay, anyway, I've been told I don't have goals. Like, what? How does that even register? Like, I never would have imagined this life, mm-hmm. You know? Like, I never thought I would be in New York. I never thought I would be at a magazine like Time. So I've already surpassed my own expectations in life. Mm-hmm. So you're totally, that's a great answer or a great question where it's like, I don't know what I'm going to do next. I should probably think about it, you know? But right now I'm going to just ride it out or ride this as long as I can. And cause I'm just content. Yeah. I don't need happiness cranked up to 11. You know, I do my work. I enjoy it. I'm enjoying the platform I have, the voice I get to express, you know? So it's kind of like, there's always this need to be better and to move on and da da da. It's like, no, it's okay to sit down and be in the present for a moment, you know? And also, like, I think talking about like parents and different generations, my dad worked at a company for like decades,
yeah.
You know? And for me, my longest job ever was 4 years. So I might beat that record at Time. So cross your fingers. I think in May it'll be 4 years.
Wow.
I think. I need to check my LinkedIn resume. I don't want to leave New York ever either. I mean, I think it satisfies me in so many ways where the culture, the diversity, going to the museum whenever I want. Mm-hmm. Like this is like world-class stuff. Like this is like Louvre level quality museums, and art and shows. And I have a friend of mine who's kind of like looking around, like, where else can I live? Where's my new home going to be? And I go, that's your journey. You know, that's, I never thought about this before, like even like moving, Spain. I don't know. Again, it's back to the stability, back to the comfort zone, back to, or the comfort levels of what you're used to. I mean, I never thought I would be in New York. So then to even go further than that is like scary, you know? Yeah.
Well, and it speaks to a sense that you're actually enjoying where you are, and what the hell's wrong with that?
No, nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing at all. Yeah. Like, I'll go to the Lego store, pick up a $10 Lego set. I'm at home, put it together. Hey, I'm happy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hanging out with my cat. I'm happy. It's cool, you know.
Awesome. Well, Martin, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work.
Sure.
It's been awesome just to hear your story, hear what you're obsessed with. And this has been a truly enjoyable time for me. So thank you.
Oh, cool. Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me. And I totally appreciate it. Thank you.
My pleasure. That does it for this episode of Getting Work to Work. Thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast. It means so much to me that you're here. Would you be willing to share Getting Work to Work with your friends, other creative professionals, and entrepreneurs? You can send them to gwtw.co or have them search for Getting Work to Work on most podcast platforms. Got a few moments to let me know what you think of this show? Head to Getting Work to Work on iTunes, click ratings and reviews, and either click the number of stars to rate the show or leave a review. Thank you so much. Would you like to be a guest on a future episode of Getting Work to Work, or know someone who should be on the show? Maybe you need some advice or just want someone to say hi to. Drop me a line by sending me an email. I'm chris@chrismartinstudios.com, or you can find me on Twitter. I'm @CMStudios. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.